This is a Mortarbox Media podcast. For more podcasts and to learn how we can help you create your own, visit mortarboxmedia.com.
Hello and welcome once again to Chill Filtered, the podcast where we drink whiskey so you don't have to, but you probably should. On today's episode, we're drinking what I would call the most recognizable whiskey in the world. It's Jack Daniel's Old Number 7, but before we get to the podcast, let's get down to a little bit of business. If you can hit the subscribe button, leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts app or anywhere that you can, that would help a lot. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Talk to us. We want to hear from you. And then also, if you go to patreon.com/chillfiltered, you can become a patron of the show, and we would love you to do that. All right, that's the business. Here's the podcast. Cole, how are you doing this morning? We're recording in the a.m.
Yeah.
For once. Yeah. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, we had a great night last night.
Yeah, listeners might notice that my voice is a little bit deeper than normal. You asked me if I had a hangover. I don't really get hangovers, but I definitely feel different morning than I normally do. Last night, I, with Cole's help, kind of organized a little whiskey tasting at my place and had some really good whiskeys. And Cole also was a nice friend and brought the Knob
Creek 25th year,
and then he gave it to me at the end of the night, which was great. So
that was a good one.
What all did we have? I brought my knob. The Knob Creek rye cast strength.
And then Ian brought the Nika Coffee. Yeah. Grain whiskey. And
Lennon brought the Old Forester
original batch, 1870. Yeah, that was a good one. And then
what Scotch did Matt bring?
Matt brought Balvenie 12 Doublewood.
Yeah,
and that was great.
Yeah, it was all really good.
Yeah,
like, all of it was really good.
Yeah.
And then I got some new whiskeys this week that we kind of delved into at the end of the night. We had a Yellow Spot because nobody brought an Irish.
Yep.
So we had a little bit of Yellow Spot. And then to cap the evening off, I finally opened my bottle of Kentucky Owl, the 11-year rye batch,
too. That was the perfect finale.
It was. Yeah. I would like to taste it. Alone.
Yeah.
My palate was so influenced by everything else going on that night that, like, I still want to go and pour myself a little bit, like, separate from everything else.
It was but candy. It was so good.
It was very smooth.
Yeah.
And, it was really delicious. It's, it's officially my favorite rye right now.
Yeah. it's the best I've had in a while. In fact, I would really put that toe-to-toe with a Handy, Thomas H. Handy and Sazerac 18 in terms of some of my favorite ryes. That was amazing to me. I didn't expect it to be that good.
I actually think it blew Thomas H. Handy out of the water.
I agree. At least the one that we had together.
Yeah. We should talk about Handy a little bit because we learned something this week that surprised both of us.
Well, I learned it about a month ago, but I had no idea. So Thomas H. Handy is known to be about six and a half years old.
It's a Sazerac.
Yep, Sazerac
and
product.
The baby Saz is a 6-year, and then they do an 18-year.
And I believe the baby Saz is like about 90 proof, if not 90 proof itself.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And the Thomas H. Handy Sazerac is known to be this bust, like this like punch to the face of a rye cast strength, typically in the like the 120 to 130 range of proofage. But Handy's the same exact recipe as Saz Baby Saz. It's just 6 years older and just cast strength.
No, 6 months
older. That's right, 6 months older.
They're both 6 years, but you just add half a year to the Handy.
And just blew my mind.
I couldn't believe that.
And I'm like, why aren't we making this standard? Like, just because it's a yearly release and they only put out so many bottles, but I'm like, you could just have the greatest standard rye ever.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you'd charge twice what you would for, you know, baby Saz, but like, oh my goodness. But I think they like, I don't know, maybe they
know what they're doing down there.
Exactly.
So, how's life after, you know, just doing stuff?
Yeah. I got my internship for another 2 weeks or a little less actually. And then I'm actually going back to school.
School.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to it, but there are things that I can enjoy. Like my schedule will be a little more open. and I'll be able to work out again at the school gym, which I'm excited about. And otherwise, things are chugging along in a good way.
Good. Yeah.
What about you?
Well, let me ask you this. Yeah. Do you just have half a year at school? Or are you?
Yep. Semester left. Okay. At least with my program. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, me, life is good. You know, sometimes.
Yeah.
It has its ups and downs, but life is really good. Work is really good.
Mm.
I don't have a lot going on, so I'm kind of boring to talk to about that stuff.
You're not bored.
What do you say we take a quick break and then we'll talk a little bit about Jack Daniels?
Sounds good.
All right. All right, we're back from break. Cole, you know, I love that music that we have. I love all the music we have, but I'm really excited about it today because I feel like this, what we're drinking today, fits the best with this music.
Yeah.
Like, it just makes you think of Jack Daniels.
It does. Yeah, that kind of slide lap steel guitar with a Kentucky whiskey, you know?
That's right. So, it's not a Kentucky whiskey. It's a Tennessee whiskey. Oh, that's right.
Well, I'm thinking the word Tennessee and Kentucky came out of my mouth.
Let me just correct you.
Yeah, no, it's good.
But yeah, so let's talk about Jack.
Yeah.
Again, what I would call the most recognizable whiskey in the world.
I would say so now that I've thought about it. You know, even though Scotch has been around way longer, I think when people think whiskey, most people
That square bottle with a black label.
Yeah. And what was it, your first whiskey too?
Probably. Yeah. I don't remember. I remember it was.
My friend Dave Wolf, a mentor of mine when I was younger, when I was 21, he took me out to a bar and he said, my mom used to rub this on my teeth to make me go to bed at night. I'm like, cheers.
Yeah, no, it definitely was my first shot.
Oh, yeah.
Of any kind of liquor.
Oh, and it was shot for me. Like, I didn't sip this thing. I put the double shot right down.
I have never sipped this. This will be a very interesting thing for me.
I think so. It's got some interesting qualities to it in terms of, like, even the process is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the history of the distillery and stuff before we get into the process and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, so what have you learned this week?
Yeah, my man Jack, or should I say Jasper Daniels, was born in 1850, so pre-Civil War days. And he actually...
Well, make that clear. So what's this guy's name?
Jasper Newton Daniels,
and they called him Jack. Yeah, Jack. Yeah. I didn't delve into find the reason they called him Jack.
I mean, Jasper and Jack are kind of similar. Maybe it's just quicker. You're like, hey, oh, Jasper. Well, I think it's easier to say, hey, oh, Jack.
I think that Jack is just kind of one of those because, like, they called John F. Kennedy Jack Kennedy. I never understand that.
Well, no, John. It's like Will and Bill or Bob and Robert.
I get that.
Okay, yeah.
Why is Jack, quote unquote, short for John?
Well,
it's not any shorter
in like Russia and places. You know what Alexander, short Alexander, is?
Alexei?
Sasha.
Okay, this is weird. Let's talk about Jack Daniels.
But like, it's kind of a thing out there. It's just like, shortened names don't always have to sound exactly the same. But
yeah.
But anyway, Jack Daniels.
Okay, shortened names don't have to sound the same. You're right.
Yeah.
But Jack is not shorter than John. It's the exact same amount
of
letters.
There. I never even thought of that.
It's not any easier, but let's talk about Jack Daniels.
No, but yeah, you're right, actually. I was about to say, but Bill and Will, I'm like, William. Yeah. So yeah. But it goes back to the 1800s. And actually, this guy, Jack Daniels, his dad passed away in the Civil War, and he didn't really like his stepmom too much, so he just ran away from home, basically orphaned at in his teens. Actually, it might have been like 12 or something. Like, he was pretty young, and he hooks up with this guy, what's his name, Dan Call.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Call's got actually a slave, and his nickname was Nearest Green, and this guy Nearest, he knew how to make whiskey.
Sure.
And so Dan Call was like a preacher man, and he would just go around traveling and preaching, but he was also a moonshiner. And so he taught with Nearest, the slave, he taught Jack Daniels how to make good whiskey, and or at least his recipe. And so actually in the news lately, it's been this further like, 150th anniversary kind of time. They've been really... what's the word? Recognizing, but also celebrating this slave guy who, even though when he was emancipated through the Civil War ending, he...
the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah, all that stuff. He stayed with the peeps that he was with.
I just like to imagine a class full of seventh graders shuffling into history class and the teacher going, okay, today we're going to talk about how slaves were emancipated because of the Civil War and stuff.
Yeah. And it'd be like,
yeah, yeah, that
because
thing.
Of the end of the Civil War stuff. One seventh grader is like, you mean the Emancipation? Yeah, yeah, whatever, kid.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway,
so
they've been talking about it in the news.
Yeah, and it's, well, the 150th anniversary came up recently of kind of the start of it all, and they're like, yeah, let's celebrate this guy. It's about time we
I was going to ask if that is something that they kind of recognize in their story. They do.
Okay. And they always sort of have, is what they say, but now it's like, let's really celebrate this guy.
I think it's kind of hard to, it must be kind of hard to do that and have it seem genuine. So maybe that's why they've shied away from it.
Yeah, they don't want to just be like, hey, check out this guy. I mean, the fact is, the dude had probably the recipe before Jack Daniels did.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Daniels, in a way, stole the recipe and started his own name thing with it. Yeah. So, but they do celebrate him, which is great. I mean, it's not like they're like, yeah, yeah, Jack Daniels knew what he was talking about. So, and, you know, did the right thing.
White appropriation of African-American culture goes back a long time.
Oodles of years. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, but I, what I like about this story is that, Nearest Green did stay with the people he was with and felt taken care of by, you know, the people he worked for and kept making whiskey with them after he was emancipated, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, the whiskey itself, very interesting. People say, is Tennessee whiskey a bourbon? It is mostly the case. Actually by federal law, it needs to be in Tennessee to be a Tennessee whiskey, but actually
it needs to be distilled in Tennessee.
Yeah. Okay. Like everything needs to go down in Tennessee. But it's weird because technically, I believe by state law, before they mellow it, and we'll get into that in a second, it needs to be basically a, bourbon mash and bourbon everything.
Okay.
But what I found out really recently, do you know what mellowing means?
I imagine adding water.
No. In this case, do you know the charcoal filtering processes?
They filter with charcoal.
Do you know when they do that?
No.
So I always thought it was after they aged it.
After distilling?
I thought it was after aging, but it's after distilling.
I would never think that it was after
they aged. I thought that would kind of take out a little more of the extra flavor at the end. And I'm like, why would you do that? But the aging is like one of the best flavoring steps in the process.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does make a little more sense that they would do it right before aging. But it's called the Lincoln County process. And actually, I believe it was Tennessee law, that they basically made that crucial to being a Tennessee whiskey lately.
Yeah.
And the Lincoln County process is they'll do like a 10-foot stack of charcoal, specifically sugar maple tree charcoal, and they'll burn it down. They'll just collect all the carbon, charcoal, and they will just make this huge stack, and they will put a ton of whiskey and just drip it down until it comes out the bottom, and that's called mellowing and the Lincoln County process. So up until recently, all but one distillery, which kind of grandfathered in, were required to use that process in order to be called a Tennessee whiskey. The other one was Benjamin Pritchard, that was said, hey, if I want to taste like Jack Daniels, I would make it taste like Jack Daniels, but that's not what I'm going
that's
for.
That's not what I want
to
do.
Yeah. So, you know, but he grandfathered in to still be called a Tennessee whiskey minus the Lincoln County process. So that's like kind of cool that they make it that way. They age it similar. When it comes down to most things, they also use a sour mash. Do you know what that means?
I have no idea. Tell me what a sour mash is.
Maybe guess. I want to hear what you might guess.
Well, so when we're talking about alcohol and you're talking about sour, I think about lambic beers. Do you know what a lambic is?
Mm-hmm.
Where they leave it open to the elements and natural yeasts and things are mixed in because it's literally open in the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what produces those sours.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
That's a good guess. No, I respect that guess. The weird thing is it has nothing to do with the actual outcome in the end.
Okay.
Of course, you know, some people are like, you get that Tennessee tang, you know, and that's not really the case.
What is that accent that you just
did? That's a Tennessee accent, I think. Or maybe it's Louisiana. Who knows?
I don't know what it is.
At least it's not Italian, which most converge to. Like, da 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 da. And even
boobity
though that's not, and we've done that so many times.
We, we should make t-shirts and say chill filtered, boobity boppity,
bibbity boppity. So what they do is it's a cool process that actually originally when things weren't as like standardized and clean in the process, sometimes you get bad batches.
Okay.
Sometimes the fermentation would go bad. And so sour mashing was a good way to prevent that. What they would do is you ever make sourdough bread or see how it's made in the mother batch or whatever?
No.
So what they'll do is they'll keep this batch in terms of whiskey here. They'll keep part of the last batch and they'll add the new batch to keep part of the old one. That old one might have a little sour taste to it, and that's why they call it sour mash. But it's really a process of keep a little bit of the old batch in the new batch and do it for every batch. And so that actually has properties that can really prevent growth of bad fermentation or even mold or anything like that. And it's not completely necessary anymore. They usually have clean, processes where... you don't have to worry about bad batches too much anymore. I remember asking, I was at Breckenridge Distillery in Colorado, and I was like, do you guys ever get bad batches? They're like, yeah, that's kind of a thing of the past and the way things are done these days. And, but I'm like, hey, I mean, they've been doing this for like 150 years, Jack Daniels. So it's kind of their process. And it changes the flavor in a little way, but it really doesn't change it in the outcome. It's not like a sour, even though the batch that they're going to, if they were to take it out of the mash, it would be a little sour, but that ferments out or distills out in the end. So, I'm trying to think, are there any other big things that Jack Daniels is known for? What is the proofage? Let me look at the bottle.
Well, that's something I want to talk about because what I read is it was traditionally 90 proof for years and years.
That's
and
right.
years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in 1987, they actually lowered it down to 86.
Uh-huh.
And I think now at this point, it's at 80.
Yep,
it's just
that's right.
straight 80 proof.
40%.
Yeah. And so I don't really know why they did that. They just decided. It's interesting, though, that the difference between the green label, which mm-hmm. is the lower end,
yeah.
which I actually happen to like more.
Oh, really? It's been a while.
Yeah. The difference between the black label, which is, quote unquote, the premium.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between the green label and the black label is up to the master tasters, basically,
really?
At the distillery.
Yeah.
Or professional tasters, I don't know.
Or the master distiller.
No, it's
oh really?
The verbiage is professional tasters who will taste because it's the same recipe, it's the same process.
It's not as good.
And they'll just go barrel by barrel and go, okay, this one is a premium, this one's a standard, this one's a premium, this one's a standard. So it's not like they're not different at all. It's just, different liquid and different wood and it reacts differently.
Yeah.
So I find that interesting that like even depending on the day and the way somebody's mouth is that day could determine whether or not it goes into a black label or a green label.
Yeah.
Which that's really interesting to me. I could be wrong about that. That's how I understand what I read. So
I read an article recently that was saying basically are Tennessee whiskeys bourbons? And the short answer is no. But the real reason behind the no is that most Tennessee whiskeys do not want to be called a bourbon. So they're just, they don't label it that way because they're like, this is a Tennessee whiskey. They're proud of that.
Yeah. I mean, I get that.
Yeah. And then one thing I was also thinking, I mentioned this before the show, but the Gentleman's Jack, that label, I found out today that the only difference between those two or is just they mellowed it twice.
Yeah.
Which I was like, that's interesting that makes such a difference. Yeah.
I've never had Gentleman Jack, so I couldn't tell you.
I couldn't tell you what's better. I've had it, but it's been so long. I was in the first early days of my whiskey search.
Yeah. I told you last night, I have started the beginnings of a search for the Bottled and Bond Jack that has been released.
Yeah, the one that's only in like
duty-free shops.
Places.
And, but I'm sure it'll start popping up around places like
on
the secondary market. But so far we're not going to get our hands on it.
Yeah.
But adding that to the list just out of curiosity of ones I want.
Oh yeah.
That and that Lot 40
cask strength
that I really want to try.
And then there was apparently a special edition by Jack Daniels called the Lincoln Road or Lincoln Count. No, it's Lincoln Road. And I heard really good things about that.
Yeah.
Like really good. I think it might even be cask strength, but I might be wrong. But I've heard people really enjoy it. But yeah. Do you want to pop in this? I think I covered everything that I was. Oh, check this out. Recently, in the past 10 years, there was a law by the Tennessee law that said People were fighting for this. Can you reuse Tennessee whiskey barrels? And they passed the law to that you can reuse it, but Jack Daniels still does not. They were like, I don't care if that's the law. We do it this the way is how we've always done it. Yep.
Yeah.
And they respected that. Diageo, the one behind, I want to say like Dickel, the other big Tennessee whiskey. I might be wrong. But one of the other companies was Diageo, who's behind one of the other companies, was like, no, we want to use reuse barrels because Diageo is this enormous drink, you know, conglomerate basically. And they kind of want to make things a little cheaper, in my guess, that sure. they would imagine, or that I imagine they would want things cheaper.
Sure. And
reusing barrels makes it cheaper.
Yeah.
But Jack Daniels has a little conviction there. And they're like, nope, that's not how we
do things. I can respect that.
Yeah.
So before we get to drinking, let's take another quick break.
Sounds good.
I have to go get some ice because I've never had straight Jack, but yeah. I have never had it with ice either. So yeah, we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with some Jack. So I gotta say, Cole, I have never felt classier. Is it classier or more classy? I think it's classier.
I'm always a big fan of classier.
Yeah. I have never felt more classy, classier than I do today.
Yeah.
Because, or at least while drinking whiskey, because we are drinking whiskey from shooters.
Shooters, little airplane shooters. Yeah.
Are the Jack ones glass or are they plastic?
Oh, they're plastic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that a lot of shooters are glass still.
Yeah, you'll get some.
Couldn't like Grey Goose? Save a ton of money?
Oh yeah,
like going to plastic on these things.
But they want—I mean, like Grey Goose is like we're the fancy.
Yeah,
vodka,
but
you know?
Whatever. Like but yeah, so we, you know, there's not much room in our lives for Jack Daniels.
No.
So we didn't. Neither of us wanted to go buy,
yeah.
even a 750 or a half pint of it. Even
and you're not going to hear a bloonk of the cork pop on this one.
Even if we had a 750, you wouldn't. It's exactly. It's a screw top.
Crack, crack, crack.
So Cole went out and bought three shooters. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to need all three.
No,
but you know we had talked about having Coke with us.
Yeah,
but.
We realized
we
probably
know
just
what
be like,
Jack and Coke tastes like.
Tastes
you guys know what Jack and Coke tastes like.
Yeah.
The point of this show is to taste whiskey, and I have never just tasted this aside from like a shot. You know, I've never tasted this straight, like just
never
sipping on it.
Yeah.
And you really don't get a lot of flavor out of shots. It's really just to get drunk.
Yeah, you just put it right down.
So I'm looking forward to this. Maybe my mind will be changed that it maybe is a good sipping whiskey. I don't know. You know, it was,
I'm open to finding out.
It was, come on. Why can't I think of that singer? Fly me to
Sinatra.
It was his whiskey of choice.
It was.
And maybe that's because they paid him money to do that.
Well, they named one after him, a special edition.
Yeah. So, but maybe he really just liked it. Who knows? Heck. So, I've done enough rambling. Why don't you pour some of that while I continue to ramble?
Here's the cork pop right here. If I can get my hands around the top.
Do you need me to do that?
No.
Oh, I heard it.
Man, I don't think it did.
Oh,
no, I'm going to open the other one. Give me that.
I want to try this sword in the stone one.
Yeah, seriously. All right, here we go. There it is. That's the sound of plunk.
I think this one is super glued.
Okay, cool. I'm not weak. Oh, there you go.
I got it.
Okay, I'm weak.
It was a tough one, though. I'll say that.
Yeah. It's a good pour. Wow, that's not what I expected from a little shooter.
Yeah, I guess I would have thought that, like, the whole... You need a little bit more.
Yeah, I do. Thank you, sir. Reach in, Krause. Don't do a left-hand reach.
It's hard to reach with these microphones in our way.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know that I'm going to be able to drink all of this.
You smell that corn? I just didn't even put it to my nose, and I got a corn kind of smell to it. Yeah, in a good way.
Pretty sweet corn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you take that nose. Yeah, so the color...
You take that nose.
You're going to take... the color is a little lighter than your typical bourbon or whiskey.
Oh, hey, speaking of lighter colors...
Yeah.
You know, I oaked some whiskey.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't want to say aged it, because it's not technically aging it.
Yeah.
But I oaked some whiskey for 2 weeks, and it started out as a white whiskey that is...
Aged in non-charred barrels?
Yes, but it was a champagne yeast.
Champagne yeast with a mostly wheat mash is what this said, I believe.
Yeah. And you know what? It didn't turn out horrible.
No, I could drink that over some whiskeys that have a name to them. And, yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't bad, but just that this is a lighter color, but it's a little, it might be a little bit darker than what mine turned out to be.
Yeah, it's lighter. 80 proof is the minimum, so yeah. You'll usually get color changes with that, because like, unlike certain scotches, you can't color bourbon / Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So what do you think on the nose so far? Oh, even smelling it from like a distance.
You know what's so funny to me? It smells like Jack.
Yeah,
that's what it smells like. It
smells like puke. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, come on.
No. I mean, like when people drink so much Jack, they puke it and you smell it in the puke. No, it does not smell like puke. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, it's so sweet. Like, it's insanely, like,
it smells like Jack.
Bananas.
Oh, that's the funny thing. Mm-hmm. I prefer a good Jack and Coke for me.
Yeah.
When it's the right ratios.
Yeah.
It tastes a little bit like banana,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit like caramel.
Yep. Which I don't think is a terrible thing to taste like bananas. Like, if you can pull that off, you know, I actually find
wow, it's so interesting. I never would have thought bananas from mm-hmm. the smell, but yeah. I get bananas on the taste when, like I said, in a Jack and Coke.
Mm-hmm. And then they have a single barrel rye, Jack Daniels does.
Yeah.
And it is pure. Everything about it is pure candied bananas. And I think that's kind of interesting in a good way. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, wow, pull off some really sweet candy. So I'm getting a little nose. It's like a Laffy Taffy banana.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can get behind that.
Yeah.
I don't think I have much to add as far as the nose goes. Ooh, Cole's going for it. He just went for an aggressive drink.
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking?
The candy bananas are on the very front. They fade out in the... You know what? That wasn't unpleasant, you know?
All right.
It's a little watery.
Yeah.
Super watery.
But I'll try it here.
The candy banana thought really did help the palate, and it faded. I mean, it wasn't unpleasant. You know, I'm not like, blah, get this out of my mouth. But it's just, it's light. It's a little watery. A little. It's got this pocket to it where you're like, what happened to the flavor? Oh, it showed up a little bit again. But I don't know. What do you think?
I'm not into it.
Not into it at all. Mm-mm. I mean, I'm not going to give this a big grade or anything, but I didn't find it unpleasant.
I didn't find it. I don't know if I can say that I found it pleasant or unpleasant. Mm. I don't know. It's tough for me to decide both of those things. Oh, that's right. We have, I distilled some water. My wife has a distiller. And then I went out and got some droppers. You're adding a lot.
Well, I feel like that's a bigger pour than most. But here's the thing. I just like took it out of by adding a little water, I took it out of the realm of legal proofage for whiskey because it's already minimum.
That's true.
So what I'm drinking here is not official anymore. No. So I'm going to go for it.
Did it change it at all?
Not really. Still watery.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've never caught on, especially the old number 7, black label, you know, standard. I've never caught those candy bananas before. But then again, I don't drink Jack too often. The last time I really drank Jack was with Coke. And
man, it's really oily.
Yeah, you just see the
you can see it floating around in there.
Really?
I wouldn't even say or particulates, not particulates, but like, you know how oil and water looks?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Where it's like swishy and yeah. So I found out recently, I think I mentioned this recently, that stuff is really impacted by chill filtering.
Really?
Yeah. So chill filtering is not always about particulates. It's kind of about that little swishiness in there, whatever you would call it. And I'll get to that later. I think I mentioned last time, I really want to get the science down behind what happens with chill filtering, which I am wrong in the past. Chill filtering is not only about particulates.
You know what? Made it better.
Yeah. I mean, it's smooth.
Yeah, that is it. I put in 3 drops of distilled water and it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's smooth. That's for sure. I mean, it's never going to be like, I don't see many people coughing when they drink Jack Daniels. They're like, oh, this is great. Unless they're like new to liquor altogether.
See, I would actually think more people would cough off of this.
Mm-hmm.
They would cough.
Yeah, why is that?
Because.
That ending kick?
Because part of the reason this is what I would say the most recognizable whiskey in the world is the reputation it has is for being a stiff drink.
Yeah.
Or I should say a drink that you drink stiffly.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning not a lot of people are drinking this straight.
Yep.
But if they are, it's because they're sad or they're angry and they're going to drink it
down a bottle.
Yeah. And so they'll drink aggressively and that would give somebody a cough. I think the reputation of a drink affects the way that people drink it.
Yep.
If that makes sense. So
So on the Total Wine website, it gives a little description, and the last sentence is, enjoy it on the rocks, or in a mixed drink. It doesn't even say drink it straight at all. It's just like, try these other ways.
We should mention the price, although if you're listening to this, chances are you know about what Jack Daniel's costs. But for a $7.50, it's $20.99 on TotalWine.com. We use TotalWine.com because they're a national chain, and their prices are probably going to be pretty similar across the board,
usually a little lower, but very similar. Yeah,
and for so retail. We always say give or take $10 to $15, judging on the whiskey, but
not in this
for
case.
Jack Daniel's, $20.99 is just about right.
Yeah,
you might be going up a dollar.
Yeah,
but
you want to hear a story?
Yeah, I'm gonna drink this. Yeah, with ice in it, but you tell me.
So when I was working, I mentioned I worked at that camp where I first tried Eagle Rare for the first time.
Yeah,
and so I had a friend, the same guy, Jay Willard. Shout out if you're ever listening. And Jay had a really rough day at the kids' camp. And I had bought a pint or a half pint of JD and left it in his car.
Yeah.
And one day he was having a really rough day with all these kids. And he said he finished the whole bottle. Yeah,
that's so
he
funny.
Grabbed it, finished it in the shower.
Yeah.
And so after that, I was like, that's kind of a new goal for me, is to get to the end of a bottle and then put it in the shower until I take my next shower and then finish the bottle.
I mean, you did that with the Lock, Stock, and Barrel.
That's right.
Because you told me that I should try that in the shower. And so you left it in
did you?
No, we haven't. I haven't yet.
Is there still liquid in there?
I think that's why you put it in my bathroom.
Hey, for a rough
day. But you set it on a shelf and it sat there for like a week. Uh-huh. And then one night we're laying in bed and
we falls
hear this
off.
Crash.
I tried to put it back on last night.
The whole shelf. Oh, did it fall last night too?
Well, it started to and I'm like, goo!
Oh, you tried to put it there. Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no. But no, the whole shelf fell.
Oh, wow.
And I had a speaker sitting on that shelf and it was nowhere to be found. I couldn't find it. It like literally just disappeared.
I think I believe
And then
ghosts.
I lifted the toilet seat cover and it's in the bowl.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
Hey.
We just threw it away. So yeah. The bowl. But
the bowl.
I'm sorry. Yeah, the speaker. I couldn't believe the bottle didn't break.
Yeah.
I mean, that fell from a height.
And you heard the clank.
Oh, yeah.
Probably. Oh,
yeah. So,
hey, saved you some.
So
mess.
I just tried. Did you try it with the ice yet?
Not yet.
I just tried it. It definitely made it worse on the rocks for me.
The bananas on the nose come out very strong.
Really? I didn't like it. To me, it just tasted super acidic.
Well,
like,
I got a little like less. I got much more dilution than you did.
Licking a battery.
Yeah. I mean, it's weak. I don't even feel like I'm drinking whiskey at all. It's just like a liqueur that is whiskey flavored, maybe. And
yeah,
it's not that. I mean, it's sweet, but it's not like it's watered down. And it's always been watered down a little
bit. Yeah. It's. No, it's really, to me, especially the finish tastes like licking a battery.
Mm-hmm. I would say, can I finish this? Yes. Can I finish the actual glass? Yes.
Yeah.
Watered down, weak, but would go really well with Coke. Like, I can't,
it does.
I can't lie.
It
like,
does. It, I mean, Jack and Coke, it's good.
I would put a good few ounces in a Coke, you know, I would get a good ratio on that thing.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't feel bad either.
Let's talk a little bit about, maybe we can start doing this on the show in general. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what is the use of this whiskey? Like what, you know, what can we get out of it?
I wouldn't buy this.
Ever?
No.
Even if you were making...
If I wanted
you're having
Coke,
people over and they're going to want whiskey and Coke.
I would get something like Buffalo Trace or Bullet.
Sure.
On that low end. For Coke.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this whiskey, though.
Yeah.
I think this is a good mixer.
Yeah.
With a mixer.
Yeah. I mean, it is. But I feel like Buffalo Trace and Coke taste better.
Okay, let's talk about this whiskey.
What do you mean?
This Jack Daniel's.
Would it go well with Coke? Heck yes.
What I'm saying is, we're going to talk about this whiskey and say, here's what we would do with this whiskey.
Oh, yeah. I already have it on my shelf. What am I going to do with it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not drinking it like we're drinking it today. I'm never going to do that again.
One time I mixed Jack with ground beef and tried to make an interesting...
great cooking whiskey.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can
but what did you try and make?
It was like a crazy behemoth of a bacon wrapped what do they call it? Meatloaf. Yeah. It tasted like barf. I feel like the meat with the whiskey just tastes, it smelled like barf. And I mean that.
Yeah,
like,
I would never mix it was bad. Whiskey with ground beef. I usually will keep a bottle of Jack Daniels or Evan Williams. Mm-hmm. And use that to cook with. I make a great garlic bourbon chicken.
Yo.
And it's really good. I stuff it with bacon.
I would do that with Jack. Like I would shooters if I needed to cook. Yeah. And that would be a good one.
It's great for cooking. It is great in Coke. It just 100% meant is. For Coke. I just don't think it's great straight.
Yeah.
You know, and there are people who like it straight. There are people who like it on the rocks. Mm-hmm. Today, I was more the version of it that I liked the most was with a couple of drops of distilled water in it.
Mm-hmm.
That mellowed it out enough for me to
finish it more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Straight, it just reminded me of college age years.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the ice, like I said, it was really acidic for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not drinkable.
You know, it brings me back to the first time I had Jack. The first liquor I've ever had was XO Cognac.
Uh-huh.
The next one I had was vodka. And I was like, maybe I don't like liquor, like hard liquor.
Yeah.
And then the first time I had Jack, I was like, that flavor is something I can get behind at least to start.
Yeah.
And that's where whiskey came out of that. I was like, well, I'm going to just get into whiskey now.
Yeah.
So it all started with Jack. And I feel like that's a lot of people, especially people that get into whiskey. It's not always they started with, you know, like,
I mean,
like something up there.
You start with what you know, and if whiskey, what you know is Jack.
So that's something it's good for.
Yeah.
Is getting an introduction. Into whiskey.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody came to you and said, hey, I've never tried whiskey before, you're not going to use Jack as an introduction, are you?
No, I'm going to use something that's palatable and enjoyable without being too strong, and yet has a lot more flavor and a lot less watered downness.
But when it's somebody on their own, chances are they're probably going to go buy some Jack
because it's
what they know.
Because it's the most recognizable brand, likely, of whiskey.
Of whiskey, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do you give it as a rating? And I think we have to take some things into consideration with this rating.
Yeah. I mean, when you, like, for example, Jim Murray, he's a big whiskey reviewer. If you get a 90 and above, it's a good whiskey.
Yeah.
If you get 85 or less, it's a bad whiskey.
Yeah.
So when I review whiskey, I don't want to be like Jim Murray or anything, but I would say that, like, a 5 is not a great whiskey.
Oh, really? I would say 1 to 3 is not great.
I would say,
and then I would say 4 to 6 are... they're all right. And then that 7 to 10 is like, wow, these are great.
I would say a 1 to 4 in my book would probably be, I would never drink this again.
Yeah.
You know, like a 5 to 7 is, you know, it's something I can maybe drink after that. Or not 5 to 7, probably like 5 to 6 would be like, you know, I can probably drink it. But like at 1 to 4 would be like, I will never drink that again.
Yeah.
You know, but I would put this at like a 4.5,
sure.
Even considering the price and stuff like that. It's just not something I would really go out of my way to buy unless I had a real reason, like cooking or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So straight, you know, just drinking it. Mm-hmm. Maybe not straight. I shouldn't say that. Drinking it by itself, whether with ice or with a couple of drops of water in it, I would probably give it, I was going to say 4, and then I started to think 5,
mm-hmm.
and then you said 4.5, and I think I'm just going to split the difference. Sweet. And say 4.5.
Nailed it.
However,
mm-hmm.
if it's a little bit of Jack and in some Coke, I'm giving this a 10.
Yeah.
I really am. Like,
even value.
I love it in Coke. So, you know, it's decent, I guess. Mm-hmm. It would get the job done.
Yeah.
I think it's a serviceable whiskey. Mm-hmm.
There was one whiskey I had that was, you know, a little more expensive. I believe it was probably between 30 and 50. It's called Lexington.
Okay.
And I was like, this is really good in Coke, but it's more expensive. You know, it's like twice as expensive at least. So Jack wins on that ground. Yeah, you know,
you can get a lot for not a whole lot.
Yeah,
which is nice. Mm-hmm. If it's your drink of choice. But all right, so that's Jack Daniels. Hey Cole, what are we drinking next week?
Oh, I'm so excited about next week. And the next week is what 2018's World Whiskey of the Year. Colonel E.H. Taylor 4-grain bourbon.
Which is a bourbon. Mm-hmm. A Kentucky straight bourbon.
Yep.
And it's bottle and bond. The EHTs are bottled and bond.
Except for the barrel proof.
Yep. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense.
Yep.
Which means it's 100 proof.
Yep.
And was, you know, protected federally or whatever.
Yep.
something.
Yeah.
It's housed federally. I don't know.
There's just federal supervision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to drink that with us, you can find it for around $70. That's on totalwine.com.
Market value is like $4 to $5 nowadays. $400 to $500. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is like a if you can find it kind of thing.
And if you have it, drink with us. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. In fact, I wonder, I can't tell. Whoops.
Do you know how much I got it for?
You know what? It looks like there's some in
at
Total Wine. Well, normally, if it wouldn't be available, wasn't available,
click that right now.
I'm clicking it right now. Normally, if it's not available, it will say not available in your store. But
oh my goodness, what would I do to buy another bottle of that?
I know, that would be great. Maybe it's not in, but so yeah, around $70 is retail, but yeah, like you said, around $400 or $500 in the secondary market.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to drink that with us, go out and find it, or if you have some, invite some people over while we drink and you can listen and drink with us. Cole, right now I just need something in my life.
You need Whiskey World News?
It's time for Whiskey World News. Yes, Whiskey World News, one of my favorite parts of the podcast, where we take an article from the internet, nothing that you or I have written, maybe someday we'll write a piece and be able to do our own, but we take an article about whiskey that we found online. We always give credit to the website and we always give credit to the author, but I'll read it, then Cole and I will discuss. And so without any further ado, here is Whiskey World News. This story is coming from thewhiskeywash.com.
Nice.
Which is a great site for all things whiskey, whether you are looking for reviews or news or things like
history.
That.
They're really good at history.
Yeah. So this is written by Nino Marchetti. And again, it's on thewhiskeywash.com. This article is titled New Redemption Whiskey Born from a Quote Unquote Mistake. So here we go. Here's Nino Marchetti. One of the more well-regarded success stories in the world of sourced American whiskey these days is Redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Owned by Deutsch. I don't know. I never know
Deutsch,
how to.
Likely.
I never know how to pronounce D-E-U.
Deutsch.
D-E-U-T-S-C-H.
Deutsch.
Sorry. Owned by Deutsch Family Wine and Spirits. All of this brand's whiskeys, including its flagship bottling, Redemption Rye, are distilled at the MGP Distillery in Indiana, something we've talked about a lot.
Yep.
We most recently tried out their 18-year-old rye bottling, and now word is a new release is hitting the market that the result of a so-called mistake during blending. The new Redemption Tyler's Mistake whiskey, according to those behind it, came about when Tyler reportedly accidentally combined rye and bourbon barrels during the Redemption production process. This blend was found to be pleasant on the palate, so it was left alone for a few years, then bottled at its prime. Noted as being a limited edition offering, Tyler's Mistake brings together a blend of 2- and 3-year-old rye and a 9-year-old bourbon into a 94-proof offering. This honey blonde with hues of light amber colored whiskey is pricing around $46 for a 750. And you'll find official limited tasting notes below for your consideration. So the aroma, black pepper and spice on the nose with underlying aromas of oak and vanilla, sweet caramel notes emerge from the bourbon. On the palate, the front begins with the same nice rye notes that you get in the nose and then rises into the bourbon spectrum with a very well-balanced oak and cherry flavor. The long and mellow finish offers sweeter notes due to the 9-year-old bourbon. Oak, cherry, and cinnamon linger on the palate. So that's the article about the Tyler's Mistake coming from Redemption. And I was interested in that, Cole, because we talk a lot about tradition, but we also talk about the positives of embracing change.
Yep.
And part of embracing change and new things is also like when mistakes happen, you don't just have to dump it.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about liquid. This is some life advice for people.
Yeah.
When mistakes happen, you don't just have to, you know, smash the barrel and dump the liquid. It's, you can take those mistakes and like make something from it.
Preach.
And so I really appreciate that Redemption is like, well, damn it, Tyler.
Yeah.
What did you do? But then they're like, well, maybe we can make something from this. And maybe maybe it, all it is for them is they're like, we're not wasting all this whiskey.
Yeah.
Like, we're not losing money on this. We need to make something from it.
Yeah.
But even that is courageous to do. And who knows? Like, this might be, like, this guy said it was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I would be open to trying it, mm-hmm. if we can get some. But what do you think about that? Like, how do you think that's common at all in like distilleries to be like,
oh, I bet.
Oh, something happened. We were not planning on this, but I guess we have to roll with it.
Yeah. I mean, you look at like, and I hate to bring up E.H. Taylor so much, but they had that tornado that came through and they're like, we're going to take advantage of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, see what the elements affect,
I'm sure,
you know?
What was the distillery that just had the collapse and stuff?
Oh, Barton, 1792.
Yeah. I am sure.
Oh yeah.
There's going to be some limited release stuff that is like, you know, the collapse, they'll call it, or whatever.
Yeah, they'll call it collapse whiskey or something.
Yeah, like and they're going to make a shit ton of money from that.
Yeah, it'll be a special. They'll only have so many barrels, so.
Yeah. And so, I think it's interesting that they do that. That companies are just, it's a positive thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's really one of the cool things about the liquor world, the spirit world, and specifically the whiskey world.
Yep.
That they are so, they love tradition,
mm-hmm.
but they're also not going to just stick to that tradition.
Yep.
You know, we can't like anymore. We're it's 2018. We got to do new stuff. So,
yeah.
And I think that's obvious in the bourbon world because there's a lot happening.
Yeah, I'd be really willing to try that one.
Yeah,
I've heard of bourbon rye mixes.
It really sounds.
And I've heard of age differences.
Yeah,
and that sounds really interesting.
It really sounds like a pretty complex taste.
Yeah,
that it starts out one way and kind of evolves and changes. So that's something I would love to listen to.
Yeah.
Hey, that's going to do it for today's show. Once again, next week we're going to be drinking the Colonel E.H. Taylor 4-grain bourbon.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to that because I love all things EHT.
Oh, so good.
So far.
And next, the week after that, we're doing Ardbeg Supernova 2015 release.
Which is a scotch that was partially aged in space.
I'm so excited.
I am not convinced that it changes much.
I didn't just think it was in space. I tasted it.
So who knows though? Who knows? I'm I'm just excited to have something in my mouth that was in space.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. There's nothing else. You know,
it's a weird thing to say. But if you want to try the E.H. Taylor 4-grain, $70 on TotalWine.com, but it is a if-you-can-find-it kind of thing.
And it was a one-time, or actually it was a two-time release, but it's really hard to find.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to find. Secondary, again, $400 to $500. Hey, like I said, that's it for Chill Filtered today. And as always, we hope that our love of spirits lifted yours.